You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Well, we're going to get to some good stuff today. It's Ugly Story with John Gruden. Thanks to G. Scott for coming in and talking about it. I don't think that that's the end. I think we'll get more and more as that Washington football team and people get more and more curious about what's going on there and what other emails were sent and what other evidence the NFL has. So we'll keep an eye on that thing. I don't know that it all comes out today, but I'm guessing over the next few weeks and months, we'll hear a whole lot more about it. But,
can I read you a quote? We have this group text going on with my buddies and my friend, doesn't matter what his name is, sent a text last night. It said, at my old job, we used to hear dance like nobody's watching and email like it will be read out loud in a deposition. That was like their general counsel.
Well, it's not a bad idea. The thing is, like, you know, I do think that's good advice for everybody because, you don't know what's going to be made public one day. But I also think that, like, don't have those words in your vocabulary, right? I mean, like, the only problem with that advice, it is good advice, but it ignores, like, what's in your heart and what you're willing to say and what you're willing to say out loud, even if it's, like, not going to be in a deposition. And so, you know, when you catch somebody saying something that they, you know, speaks to that, I there's some value to that as well. So it's complicated. It's not simple. You can't just say this is good, that's bad, this is the way we should do it, this isn't. You kind of have to look at these individual cases, and that line is going to keep moving as we as a society figure out where we're most comfortable. So we'll talk about it in and out throughout the day today. We also got a lot of hockey going on today. John Buchegross joins me at 8 o'clock. Cammy Granato will be with us at 9 o'clock. She is a scout for the Kraken and also Hockey Hall of Famer and a big hockey family. Her brother Tony Granato played in the NHL for a long time. She was an Olympic medalist, so that'll be a lot of fun. We'll do that at 8 and then at 9. Really good news, I thought, for the Seahawks after what's been a week or so of just constant stream of bad news. Other than Russ, the injury situation sounds a little bit better, and specifically with Chris Carson, Pete said this.
Big turn. He had a big turn over the weekend, and so we'll see how it goes.
Assuming that the big turn isn't that his neck got significantly worse, I'm going to assume that means he's a whole lot better, and we're going to see him this weekend. And if I'm Pete Carroll, good. I need that.
Yeah.
How much you want to bet that Pete Carroll wants to run the football this week? He's got Geno Smith, who hasn't been an effective starter in this league ever and hasn't started a game in however many years. And he's going up against a Pittsburgh team that, you know, is not perfect, certainly. Don't you think Pete wants to run the ball? Go with what he feels most comfortable with, especially with a quarterback that you don't necessarily trust? Pete doesn't even trust quarterbacks that he should trust.
I would take that bet every week, but especially this week.
This week. More is making sure you want to start Chris Carson. That, I think. If you have Chris Carson in fantasy, you probably are going to want to start him this week.
I do in two leagues, and I could really use his help.
There you go. Well, Chris Carson sounds like he'll be healthy. That is huge for Pete and the Seahawks. And meanwhile, Russell Wilson at practice, apparently helping out.
30 minutes on the practice field, he was great. You know, he was there. I mean, he did great with he knows, you know, his job is to help Geno and get him ready.
What do you think that involves? Like, generally, do you think Russ is making his scouting report that he does every week but giving it to Geno? Probably, right? Helping to simplify things, helping to be another coach. You know, it's got to be weird because you've got a quarterback coach. You've got an offensive coordinator. They need to have that relationship with Geno. I wonder if it's hard for Russell not to interfere in that and like find the right way to be helpful without actually being a problem.
Well, how many years have they had together now?
I think this is year 3 or year 4 for him and Geno.
I mean,
been
I feel
together
like
a few years now.
They've done enough film study, enough quarterback room stuff together that it's not like it's his first time having to have conversations about the next opponent. They've been doing this a lot.
But it's always been in the other direction where Geno is the assistant and Russell is the captain.
Yeah.
Now you've got a new situation where Russ has got to be the assistant, and that's got to be an uncomfortable role for him. Pete actually talked about what it's like to go from being a starter for a long time to being a backup in talking more about Geno's history.
It's really challenging because Geno, his entire life, has been the best player in his program, everyone he's ever been, you know, and first rounder, and I mean everything about it. I mean, that's what his brain is geared to is to play and compete and win games and all of that. So that's why I love him so much, because he's been such a great teammate in the time that he's been here.
I think that's something worth talking about, as we're talking about people changing and learning and listening and, you know, growing. Geno Smith of 2021 may not be the same Geno Smith of 2015. And certainly a humbling experience to find out that no one in the league wants you as a starter. You end up, he was a second round pick. He had flamed out with the Jets. He went a few other places. I think he went to the Chargers and they're somewhere else in there. And then ultimately ends up here in Seattle as a backup, because that was the only job that was open to him. It's not like anybody was out there beating down his door saying, "Hey man, I want you to come start more games for us." He came here and had to humble himself, had to swallow the pride, had to accept life as a backup in the NFL. And it sounds like, at least according to Pete and Russ, he's done a great job of that. He must have, or else he still wouldn't be here all these years later, right?
Exactly.
So I got to believe them, because otherwise they would have found somebody else to come in and do that job.
I'm weirdly excited and morbidly curious in so many different ways to see what Geno's going to be like the next few weeks. Just, it could be like unwrapping the Christmas gift that you wasn't the one you wanted, but still makes your friends jealous.
So what if he's terrible? What if it's terrible? What if the team doesn't function? It's a possibility.
Yeah, I know it is. And then you find out how great you had it with Russ. So all these Russ doomers, you got to be like, well, take a back seat.
You're going to have to, right? I mean, like, if they're not good over the next few weeks, for all the talk of how Geno's a pretty good backup, right? This isn't like, remember when Peyton Manning got hurt when he had the neck injury? And they lose every game for the rest of the year? They won one game the rest of the year?
That was the Brock Osweiler experiment?
It was before that.
Okay.
It was like the guys they had on that team were awful. They were all bad. Dan Orlovsky and a few other guys, I think, ended up on that team. They had their backup situation was a complete mess. I think they might have even ended up bringing in Kerry Collins.
Oh, this was the early injury. Oh, yes. I'm thinking of the Super Bowl year.
No, I mean when he first got hurt with Indy. And, like, it wasn't just that they lost Peyton Manning. It's that their backup situation was so abysmal that they couldn't function as a team that year.
Kerry Collins always looked like someone just, like, got him off of a bar stool and put him in a game.
Well, I think that happened. I think Kerry Collins, like, there was some incident with Kerry Collins and drinking that I think is triggering your memory. Oh, no. But yes, he did look like that. I totally agree.
I like this.
Grab this guy. Bring him in.
I like this text at 360. It's like Russ is whispering in his ear, "Hey, Geno, go deep." It's Russ.
He may be saying that. Well, if Geno is not able to, you know, make this offense function, I think you're going to point at Russ and be like, man, look at everything he's covering up for. There is the possibility that Geno functions really well. And if that's the case, I'm not going to think he's better than Russell Wilson, because, you know, that would be insane. But I will wonder whether or not Russell is running the offense to the peak version of what it can be. If there's a different way to do it that maybe Russell needs to consider, and maybe Shane Waldron's got a little bit more chops than Russell or anybody else has been willing to admit so far. So I don't know the answer to any of that. Geno could come out and lay an egg for three straight games, and we may be sitting there going, oh my God, what has Russell been covering for here? Geno may be unbelievable. And we'll say, oh my God, Russ, you got to learn from what this guy's doing and take it down a notch. Stop playing hero ball and start just distributing. It is a fascinating, what'd you say, a morbid curiosity, Justin?
Yeah.
I would agree with that. In some ways, this is the most interesting stretch of Seahawks games we've seen in forever. You get an opportunity to find out what's really been going on. And I don't know that any of us truly know. We've been debating it, right? We've been trying to figure out who's at fault and who's responsible for what. But we're going to have more information. This is like a scientific experiment with a control group.
Well, and as much as we say that these games are winnable, it will be a test for Geno Smith, because the Steelers and the Saints are both in the top 16 on defense.
Yeah, they both have decent defense. The Jacksonville's just terrible all around, right? But both those teams have decent defenses. It's weird to think of New Orleans with a good defense and a bad offense. Like, that's sort of hard to fathom. Like, it's just, you see those uniforms and you're like, oh yeah, high-flying offense. But yeah, I think we're going to learn a lot about Russell, a lot about Pete, a lot about Shane Waldron, a lot about this roster over the course of these next 3 or 4 weeks. And I'm glad Chris Carson will be back. It sounds like Posick may be back. Trey Brown's going to be back. Some guys are going to return, which is great news for them to try to win. But also for us, Gerald Everett will be back. to try to determine what's really going on and why this team is 2-3 right now instead of 4-1, which is where I think we all believed they would be after five games.
Can I ask you a yes or no question?
Yeah, of course.
Do you think Geno is better than Trey Lance?
Right now, today, yes.
All right.
I think.
Ish.
I don't know. I mean, Trey Lance can run. At the very least, he can move. I mean, like, he just seems like he's got a problem.
Get
like,
back to him after Sunday.
Yeah. Well, and also...
Everything's on the table now.
I mean, I've barely seen Geno. Also, Trey Lance...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know if I can say yes to that. I don't think I can.
We need to see more.
Trey Lance is hurt now, too, by the way. He might not even play. What is going on in San Francisco? Do not, like, I don't know if it's the field or, like, the something.
Them and the Giants.
They are cursed right now, man. It is, well, they, you know, they had their time in the 80s and 90s, and now, obviously, they're paying for it. We're going to get our time starting tonight. I'm so excited, man. Hockey returning tonight. We talked about all the various milestones along the way. Tonight, though, game one of the regular season for our Seattle Kraken. It sounds good to say it. Horn as much as possible.
It keeps making me jump.
More thinks that I'm like something's gone wrong with the board every time I'm playing the horn. But I love hockey. We were talking about earlier, and so I'm excited about tonight. I gave you one reason earlier, just like all the things I love about watching the game. But there's a couple other things that I'm excited about. One is that I love following teams. Right? I love, obviously, following games are great. I love watching sports. Last night was a great sports night. Tonight's going to be a great sports night. We're into this business, obviously, and you guys are listening to this show because you love sports. We love watching it. I also love following teams. I love the ins and outs of a roster. I love the way a season develops and the ups and downs. I love a long-term plan and the storylines that go with it. It's why I ultimately got into sports radio and why I generally think the general manager is the most interesting person in any organization. I love following a team, and hockey's best when you have a team to follow. If you've watched it on and off in the past, or you know try to get into an NHL game now and again, or just the Stanley Cup, it's not the same. It's not the same when you don't know all the players, when you're not familiar with everybody, when that all makes sense to you because you know what person's, you know, each person's strengths and weaknesses are. So I am really excited to follow a team and everything that goes with that and the roster construction and how do you build it and do you have the right players? That doesn't mean we're going to talk about it every single day. I don't know whether the appetite is there for that in Seattle right now, but I'm excited about it. And if you like hockey, you may be excited about that as well. So that's two. The third is this, and it's about all of us. I think Seattle, and I've said this for years, Seattle is a world-class city. This is further proof. Seattle's a world-class city. This is one of the best cities in the country. Truly, it really is. It's one of the bigger cities in the country, right? We're a top 10 or 11 market, and it's a beautiful city. Truly beautiful. I'm trying to think. I know that there are people right now. I'm already anticipating your text message about the homeless people.
Oh, man. Yeah,
so,
me too.
So, all right. We can talk about that on another station. But just the beauty of Seattle, the natural beauty here, the city, the skyline, what you get around here. There are very few truly beautiful cities in this country.
We saw it yesterday at Mount Rainier.
Oh,
just
my God.
Marveling at
yes.
it.
Justin and I went down to Chambers Bay yesterday. It's not bad down there. But how many truly beautiful cities are there in this country? Truly beautiful.
I mean, I grew up in Montana, so I don't...
Cities.
I know,
cities.
I was going to say, we don't have cities.
I mean, like, you know, you got to give New York. New York's a truly beautiful city.
I think the Bay,
the
I think
skyline.
The,
like, San Francisco is a beautiful city. Are you willing to say Miami more? You live briefly there. Is Miami a beautiful city?
The South Beach area is.
Yeah, it's beautiful with the Art Deco homes and all that. Like, I think there's some beauty to Miami. St. Louis. Oh, wait, sorry. Sorry. No, we're just not going to go there. There aren't a ton.
Chicago?
Yeah, Chicago's beautiful. I would,
that downtown
on the
district's
lake
pretty crazy.
That.
The River Rock.
There's probably a few others. If you have thoughts, you can text them in. 206-421-3776.
Denver?
I don't know if Denver's truly beautiful. Ooh. The area's beautiful. I don't know if the city. I don't know if I quite go. I like Denver
Colorado
a lot.
Colorado Springs, where I move from, is probably prettier than Denver.
Yeah, Denver's
a cool city.
It is. I don't know if I'd call it a truly. Seattle's beautiful. This is with the Space Needle and the mountain and the water and the skyline. Seattle is a beautiful, beautiful city, and it's world-class. We have the biggest corporations in the world are all here. Microsoft and Boeing and Amazon and Starbucks and Costco. I mean, like, Seattle is world-class. And we need all of the major sports to be there. This is another step in that direction. Obviously, the NBA is coming too. And Lywicki mentioned that. He was on with Bob and Dave last week.
At some point in time, the NBA is going to come back, and they're going to love it. They're going to come back. They're seeing what's going on here and saying, hey, you know, and we're going to be ready when they're ready.
And we've heard the commissioner say it and everybody else. It's not news. It's fact. The NBA will return and be in this building. The NHL will start tonight. Seattle is a world-class city, and I love it when we act that way. 7:15, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, after all the waiting, after the building, after the introduction of the name, and then the drafting of the roster, we finally get to see our Kraken tonight in... Well, not in person, but for real anyway. I was going to say in person. It's not. They're on the road. But we get to watch
them. 10 days in person.
The inaugural season kicks off in Las Vegas. If you think back on inaugural seasons here in Seattle, the Seahawks went 2-14. That was 76. The Mariners the next year went 64-98. The Sounders a little more successful in their first season. They went 12-7-11. Man, that's a lot of ties. In 2009, well, the Kraken will have the benefit of a weak division, a pretty favorable draft process. And so I think the expectation here is that they will have a playoff team in year one, which should be great. News yesterday, Mark Giordano named as their captain. Four players will rotate as alternates each night. Jordan Eberle, Jaden Schwartz, Yanni Gord, Adam Larson all get the honor. To wear the C really has immense history and meaning in NHL dressing rooms, and the players will treat that honor with great reverence. So congratulations to Mark Giordano. That is really cool. It's also an official role to it, by the way. You may not know this. The captain or the alternates, that's why it's an alternate, not an assistant, the A, are the only ones who are designated to communicate with referees. So if there is a rules explanation or if you want to argue a call, it's got to go through the captain or the alternate, depending on who's on the ice at that time. So there is an honor to it off the ice. Generally, they're also the ones who will take a ceremony face-off or something like that. But there is actual purpose to having a captain and a couple of alternates.
And the first one to get the cup, if they win, is that right?
Always. The captain gets the cup first, that's for sure. Unfortunately, it looks like COVID has ripped through that roster. Up to five players could end up missing tonight's opener, including first-line center Jared McCann.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Crazy story. John Gruden officially resigned as a head coach in Las Vegas yesterday after a second group of emails surfaced in which he used homophobic and misogynistic language in emails. This followed last week's emails where he used racist language to describe Demora Smith, who's the head of the players' union. Look, these were all sent from Gruden to Bruce Allen when Gruden was at ESPN as a commentator and Allen was the team president in Washington. I believe they had worked together in multiple stops before then. In the emails, he calls Roger Goodell a homophobic slur. He criticizes him for, quote, forcing Jeff Fisher to draft a gay player, although he used another slur there. And he also complained about the hiring of female officials. Oh, by the way, the two also exchanged photos of topless women, including Washington cheerleaders. So, yeah, that's a lot to come out in a very short time. John Gruden has forfeited his right to work in the NFL. He obviously resigned yesterday. The comments are gross. End statement. There is more to the story, though, and it's interesting to try to see how this came out and what we can learn from that. It stems from the investigation into the culture of the Washington football team under owner Dan Snyder. And it's also interesting that only John Gruden has been taken down by this thus far. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, even speculating that the league wanted Gruden to resign and maybe threatened to leak more emails if he did not. I don't know if that's true, but it certainly fits with the transparency we've come to expect from Roger Goodell in this league, or lack thereof. How prevalent are emails and statements like this? Why would they only leak certain emails? Do they have a trove of information that they are waiting to leak at a later time that suits them? These are all legitimate questions that we should know answers to when it comes as it comes to the NFL. Unfortunately, I wonder if John Gruden was singled out because he's the only one who feels this way. I doubt it. He's the only one stupid enough to provide written proof. Again, unlikely. Or because somebody just hated him and therefore he's the one who ends up being the one to go down. I think there should probably be more, and we'll find out over the next days, weeks, and months.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
If I know one thing about Pete Carroll, it's that he's going to go with his gut in the biggest moment. I'm guessing that this week he retreats even farther into what makes him most comfortable. That is running the football, and he got some good news on that front. Sounds like Chris Carson is practically a sure thing to go based on the big turn that Pete said he took over the weekend. So that's good news. If you want to run the ball, you're going to need Chris Carson this weekend. Also, Gerald Everett should be back. Ethan Posick may be able to go. So some really good news in the running game and the offensive line for the Seahawks. News a little bit less clear regarding Bobby Wagner. Sounds like he's got a bruised knee. We'll find out what his status is as the week goes on. Busy, busy sports day yesterday. Great night last night. Monday Night Football, unbelievable OT performance. Baltimore beats Indy with an absurd game out of Lamar Jackson. Threw for 442, another 62 on the ground. That is a wow. Still, I will say, I don't like that that game ends on a touchdown in overtime. Indy never gets the chance in overtime to touch the ball. Why does Baltimore get 66 minutes and Indy only gets 60? That doesn't seem right. Red Sox walk it off for the second straight night. This time it was a ninth-inning sack fly from Kike Hernandez. That eliminates the Rays, so they go down. Braves take a 2-1 series lead. Jock Peterson with a pinch-hit three-run shot. Great finish in L.A. to cap off the night. Dodgers' Gavin Lux looked like he had a home run to tie it and two outs in the ninth. But no, cold night in L.A. Wind knocked it down. Giants win 1-0. They lead that series. Here's what we got today. Houston and Chicago, game four. They were rained out yesterday. That's at 11. Milwaukee, Atlanta at 2. And then the Giants in L.A. at 6 o'clock. That is everything you need to know.
There are a lot of things about the captains that I don't... What other privileges do captains get in hockey? Is there anything?
No, I'm not, I mean, the only official thing is that on the ice, you can talk to the referee, same with the alternates. I mean, in the room, and we talked to John Forslund about this a week or so ago, it's just honor, right? They get to, there's a lot of honor that goes with it.
Okay, so but when you say talk to the referees, you don't mean like debate. They just are the ones that get to explain.
Yeah, I think a little of both. Like, if you want to argue a call, it's supposed to go through the captain. That's my understanding. I've never played hockey at any level, let alone a high one. So this is my understanding in terms of watching it my whole life. I've never, you know, I've never played the game, but my belief and understanding is that if you want to argue a call or debate something, it's supposed to go through the captain or the alternate. That's not to say you won't hear some chirping from other players, but, you know, the actual, like, debate or arguing is supposed to go through the captain. They get a lot more leeway, I think, from the officials.
Okay.
You know, then there's also just the ceremonial stuff, ceremonial face-offs or having to do stuff. Or, no, I don't mean having to, but doing stuff in the community or just being a representative of the team. That falls more to those in leadership than it does to the rank and file. So the captain and the alternates, you'll see a little bit more of that from them. I think it's great. I love the way hockey has this code. It's got a lot of codes. And while they're all unwritten, I know people love to rip unwritten rules. I love unwritten rules. I think it's great. I love that there's no specific rules governing, as you mentioned, who gets the cup. But it starts with the captain, and then it goes to the longest veteran, and then it goes, like, they know. It's unwritten, but they know where it needs to go.
Yeah.
I love that when guys fight in the NHL and somebody goes down to the ice, you don't keep punching him. You lay off. The fight's over. He's on the ground. It doesn't have to be written anywhere. That's the code. I love that old school element, and the NHL, I think, preserves it. Probably better than any other league. Some of that old school
respect
code.
For the game. Yeah.
There's a lot. You'll hear that phrase so much. Respect for the game. Respect the game. Respect the room.
But hockey's unwritten rules on that are so much cooler than baseball's.
I like baseball's too. I like unwritten rules. I think they're great. I think they're good for sports. They're good for sports radio. They're good for viewing. They're good for the games.
Good,
I like
good for
rules.
Arguing. I love it. Yeah.
I like everything about it. You won't convince me otherwise. I think they're great. Keep the rules unwritten. I think it's perfect. I love it that way. All right, coming up, everyone makes mistakes, right? But not everyone's willing to get owned for them. But we are here on this show, and we will take our L's together next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Got a couple other suggestions in here for truly beautiful cities in the U.S., we got one on Boston, one on D.C. My buddy Joel says Scottsdale. I could be convinced on that area. I don't know whether Phoenix itself is like a beautiful city, but that area is beautiful in its own way.
Scottsdale is, yeah.
Like the whole basin area with the sunset, but not as a city, Phoenix. D.C.? Is D.C. beautiful? It is. Especially with the cherry blossoms and all that. I'll give you D.C.
Yeah,
you
I really like D.C.
You got the Potomac and all that.
I went to a game at the new Nationals Park, but from the top, the view of there was really nice.
Underrated, beautiful city. And it's appropriate for this week. Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
Pittsburgh, I know it sounds ugly. You hear Pittsburgh and you think Cleveland.
Rust Belt and gross.
You think Buffalo.
Yeah.
It's not. Pittsburgh is truly one of the most beautiful cities I've ever been to. I love it. The mountains and the tunnels and the bridges and the ballpark. Like, if you get a chance to go to Pittsburgh, go. It's a cool city.
I saw one there, Salt Lake City.
No. False.
Oh.
False.
Okay.
Just
all right.
Straight false.
Boise, an underrated cool town.
I mean, it's not maybe a cool town, but beautiful?
I think Boise is beautiful.
It's not big enough to be beautiful. I mean, cities.
Big enough to be beautiful.
Boise's got like 7 people that live there. All right, we got to take the L. It's time. It's time for us to take our L's. What do we get this week? What did we do wrong? Who's getting the L?
I mean, where do you want to start?
I'm gonna jump in and take one. Someone pointed out an incorrect prediction that I made for fantasy football a couple of weeks ago, so I'll take another one. It's going to happen. I will say all of my starts for last week worked out well if you followed them, but I told people not to start Steelers running back Najee Harris because the Broncos had not allowed a single running back over 59 yards, and he had 122 yards and a touchdown on Sunday. So,
sorry if you followed that advice. Do you have to take the L for fantasy advice, really? Like, well, that feels
someone
like
wanted me to on Rondale Moore a couple weeks
that
ago.
That seems really intense to have to, like, isn't the whole thing a guessing game anyway?
Yeah, no one's ever going to. I mean, Matthew Berry's one of the, early fantasy experts,
yes.
And he doesn't get it right.
We just spent this whole last hour talking about accountability. I think it's important, Maura.
All right,
Maura. All right, you're right.
Maura,
I take the L.
Take your L.
You'll always be a loser.
I'm going to give an L to.
I like the idea that you'll always be a loser because you got a fantasy prediction wrong.
I know, right? It's a
low over the top.
This one, I don't even know who to give the L to. Is it to the team? Is it to the guy who drafted him? I'm just going to have to say it'll go under the same umbrella as the Mariners. For Chris Taylor.
Oh, well, no, it's to Jerry for letting him go.
Is it to Jerry?
Yes, he let him go for nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, he just let him go. Now, we've talked about this, and he's got some good reasons behind it. Like, Chris Taylor ended up being the Paul Sewald of the Dodgers. Like, the Dodgers saw something where if he changed his approach, it would change who he was. And that happens in sports.
Okay.
But Chris Taylor's been so good.
Reyes fires. Swing and a drive. Left field. On its way. Chris Taylor walks it off. He sprints around the bases. And the Dodgers are heading to the division series.
Yeah, Chris Taylor walking it off for the Dodgers. Ex-Mariner giving away. Yeah, Jerry will take the L for that
one. He's been putting on a show defensively, too.
I know. He made a couple nice plays last night.
The only playoff baseball game I've ever been to, I went to L.A. to see one. I was like, I want to know what this feels like.
It's great, isn't it?
And I counted probably 7 Mariners on the field and was just this, like, ooh.
Playoff baseball is pretty unique, man. There's a tension in the air for playoff baseball that doesn't exist in other sports. Football's got football's got the adrenaline. Basketball has, I think, also like an energy to it. But baseball just has this tension.
A nervous energy.
It's so cool, man. Playoff baseball's the best.
Yeah, so okay, that L is going to
Jerry.
Sorry,
Jerry, you got to take the L.
Okay, who's calling me a loser?
I'm not doing that to his face, though.
No. That's why I was like, I didn't even want to say his name the first time we did the round. I'm like, who do I blame? I was like,
You got to blame him. I think he would. And Jerry would. I think if Jerry were here and understood the segment, he would take the L for himself. He knows. He knows he got that one wrong. He got others right. That's how it goes. That's the GM.
Well, even when I think one of the interviews that we did when we talked to him about how good it must have felt that night that Toro homered off of Graveman, and he was like, yeah, but there's plenty I've gotten wrong, too. So I don't want to.
He knows how that works, for sure. All right, who else gets an L?
I think this one, and Maura, you probably have some sound on this. So anybody who watched football over the weekend and last night saw the kickers having the worst time historically in the history that I think of in the entire NFL.
Yeah, so here's Sunday. NFL kickers missed 12 extra points and 12 field goal attempts. The first time since the NFL moved back the extra point line in 2015, the kickers missed double-digit attempts on field goals and extra points in the same week. And that doesn't even count the two that were missed last night by poor Rodrigo Blankenship, who was hurt.
Yikes. This reminds me of one of my favorite things about Rex Ryan is how much he hates kickers, kind of like Dave Wyman. And this was him on Get Up Monday complaining about how bad the kickers did over the weekend.
I hate kickers, man. Pat McAfee's the only kicker I've ever liked. I hate kickers. But, like, it's not that dang hard.
It's not. It's that
kick
hard.
The thing through those things right here. The uprights, that's the only job you got.
It does seem kind of hard, though, doesn't it?
It does seem really hard.
Apparently. Have you ever tried to kick a football? It's pretty hard.
Remember after the double doink, the Chicago held the open tryout for kickers and just watched everybody get humbled?
It's really hard to kick a football. Especially,
I actually thought Cody Parkey got a bad rap on that. They got a hand on it.
Right.
It wasn't like he just straight missed.
Don't tell that to Clayton, man. That guy,
he
will take any opportunity to crush Cody Parkey.
He calls him Cody Panky, though.
He hates him.
He thinks his name is Cody Panky.
Well, that doesn't mean much. That's neither a sign of respect nor disrespect from John.
I think that the real L should go to the Cincinnati Bengals kicker, Evan McPherson, who celebrated the missing field goal.
Oh, yeah. Why did that happen?
He just saw it hit the flag on the top of the goalpost, and he just assumed it was in the way the flag went. Jumped up, celebrate, slapping helmets. And it's like, nah, man.
Because you lost.
So I think
you'll always be a loser.
Are we going to throw one at Jamal Adams? Do you think he deserves an L? We were all excited about this sound from Jamal.
Just going for it. Just getting back to, you know, who we are as a defense. You know, our mindset hasn't changed. We understand who we are. And we just got to get back to believing in that. Everybody, you know what I mean? And playing our style of play. And, you know, starting this week, things will change.
Did they?
No. Didn't change at all.
Narrator's voice. They did not.
Yeah, we got to give an L to Jamal.
Take the L, Jamal.
He's not playing all that well. Give him an
L. You bunch of losers!
Don't say that to Jamal, though. I don't feel comfortable playing those sound bites when we're talking about people like Jamal Adams.
You heard Joe Fan get it from him last year, right?
I did, yeah.
Mr.
Joe.
What'd you think of my coverage this week?
Did you hear what happened to Joe Fan this weekend?
No.
Great story. I love this. Joe was at the Shriners Open in Vegas because he's living down there now. And Brooks Koepka hit him with a drive where he was standing. Yeah, which happens sometimes in golf. Aaron Drive hit somebody in the crowd. So it hit Joe in the shoulder. Ball bounces and down, and he was okay. Like, it didn't kill him or anything. I'm sure it hurt. But so Brooks comes over, doesn't say a word, doesn't ask anybody if they're okay, hits his shot, and Joe's like, hey, man, I kept your ball in play with my shoulder. How about, like, a high five? Nothing. Brooks just walks right on
No
by.
Words.
Nothing.
Did Joe take
Team Koepka. No, wait. Team Bryson, I mean. Sorry. Team Bryson. I screwed it up. Sorry. Give
me
the
L. Did.
Give me the L.
You take it.
Give me one of those L's. Do we have more?
The guy's a loser.
There we go. Another texter here says, Salt gets an L for thinking Pittsburgh is a cool city.
Man, that view from the Pittsburgh Stadium is pretty cool.
It's unreal.
That is a beautiful setting.
It really is a pretty city. I know you may be doubting me right now. Well, if you have other things that we should be taking the L for, you can always text them in to 206-421-3776. That's Mac and Jack's text line. Or you can hit any of us up on Twitter. All right. Where are we going next? Can we talk to Brock? Can we talk to Brock?
Talk to Brock.
I got a lot to ask him. And then we got our hockey segments coming up. We're going to talk to Buchagras. We got Cammy Granados. A lot going on today, man. Kraken start for real. Tonight, stick with us throughout the whole morning. It's Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Ewart is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Ewart says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. I'm doing well. Doing well.
Good. It's nice to hear your voice.
How was it yesterday? Good day. Good day at Chambers.
Great day at Chambers. Is there a bad day at Chambers? No.
Well, when the greens are all brown and your grandfather, your like grandfather's upset about it, that's pretty bad.
I know. Poor Papa. He was so mad about that.
Yes.
The day he died. Yes. One of the last things he ever said to me was how much he hated Chambers Bay on television.
Michael, have they fixed those greens at Chambers yet? They were so brown for the Open.
They looked great yesterday, man. It was perfect down there. Just a great, great day.
So. And you shot 77, man.
Yeah,
that's
wasn't
awesome.
That great? No.
That way to go, buddy.
Do that. But add 11 to that, and you're right.
There you go. Very respectable.
What do you make? Yeah, I felt pretty good about it. What do you make of the John Gruden deal, man? What an ugly there's only so much you can say about what he said. It's ugly. It's nasty. Yeah. Like, there's not really any other opinion on the things that they uncovered from his email. But where do you think this goes?
How many other folks in the NFL are nervous this morning?
I would think tons.
Yeah. So and this came about, from what I understand and listening to different sources and folks, is just in information, was in the digging into the Washington football team, correct? in the Daniel Snyder and Bruce Allen, the former GM president there, and some of the bridges that were burned. And I'm sure, you know, from what I understand, that is where this was turned over. And you think of, you know, coaches that have been fired, people that have been let go. We have seen this now a couple different times. Down at Arizona State, there was an assistant that was let go, and he turned in lots of emails and pictures that ended up costing folks their jobs of illegal recruiting. Right. And we have, you know, seen this at different colleges and folks that have been let go. And, you know, you put things in writing, you put them in email. And how many times, Salky, over 13 years with different stories, mm-hmm. have we said what you do in darkness and you think you can get away with, Tiger Woods comes to light. And yeah, this is a pretty awful stain for John Gruden. And I do wonder how many of that old school world where that language was acceptable or laughed at or just, you know, shoved to the side, sit there and go this morning, man, you know, am I going to be exposed?
I wonder if anybody will come forward and say before they get exposed, say, hey, before this comes out, I want to tell you, I used to talk this way.
Yeah, it's a good question.
I wonder if anybody will do that. I mean, like, look, we were just talking about it in the other room, Moore and Justin and I. Like, if you had like audio transcript of me with my friends in the 1980s when I was a kid, yep. I mean, you'd hear a lot of things that I would not be even consider saying today. I mean, the culture was different. I was different.
Do you remember when we tried to educate Kyle and Howdy and, you know, some 80s movies, Mike?
Right.
And we started to watch some of the 80s movies. You're like, you can't say that.
Well, and not just things you can't say, but I mean, the way, especially, you know, gay people were used as a punchline. Like, it was a completely different time and culture. And I was a little kid, you know, young kid. I've changed since then. But yeah. I wonder whether there are folks that would come out and be like, and I, you know, another older coach who comes out and says, yeah, I probably have similar things. Before they come out, let me just come out here right now and tell you. Yeah. I don't feel the same way I did then.
Yeah.
I wonder if anyone will do. I doubt it, because I think everybody will try to hide for as long as possible.
Well, and I also wonder if further light is shown into some of the darkness and nastiness of that Washington football team, and Daniel Snyder in particular. And I know that he's paid some fines and they've had, you know, some training and all of that they've gone through. But are you telling me that if you dug through his emails?
Mm-hmm.
That you were.
Well, I don't know. And maybe he was quote unquote smarter about how he hides some of that stuff. I mean, where they have evidence versus where they don't. But I think it does speak to, and you and I have talked about this for years, just the entitlement that can grow out of leagues like the NFL. And certainly they're not the only one. But how much, you know,
power, control.
Exactly. And you feel like you deserve it, and you have the ability to control so much. We joke about old movies, about sports. But the program is the one I almost always reference, because I think there's a lot of truth to the way James Caan is trying to control everything around him, and he can't.
And that is a bunch of the old guard. I mean, that was the way. I mean, I even played in an era where coaches tried to ride on elevators by themselves, and, you know, they tried to kind of have that much control and that much power. And, you know, that's just not the way in 2021 that things operate.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that at the collegiate level, and even Nick Saban is a guy that people would look at and go, oh my gosh, what a control freak. He's got a button on his desk to open up his office door, and what a power hungry.
To close his office door behind you. And that's what makes it so awesome.
But I think if you chatted with folks that work down there and you see how open and transparent and how he welcomes the media in and how he leverages all of those relationships and understands that this isn't just a power grab and a total control.
Yeah.
That if I'm going to market and I'm going to recruit and I'm going to bring everybody aboard, it's a different world today than it was then.
You ready for the Kraken tonight on ESPN?
You wearing your sweater?
I'm wearing my sweatshirt for sure.
Are you wearing it today?
I'm wearing it right now as we
are
speak.
You really?
If you're watching on the stream right now, 710sports.com. Yeah, I got my light blue, kind of baby blue Kraken quarter zip. Yeah, I got a quarter zip on today.
I'll be watching tonight. I think me and millions will be watching in some curiosity. More than anything, to begin with, some fandom, certainly. The hockey faithful in the Pacific Northwest that have been waiting for this day for decades and decades and decades, who have loved, you know, all of the minor league programs and some of the rivalries this is going to create, and frankly, the role play. Because I'm expecting a heavy, heavy puck drop?
Yes.
Role play in there in Vegas.
Well, they do that. I mean, that's part of
I know they do.
Vegas
I can't wait for
story
it.
And, you know. They do the whole role-playing thing before they...
So are they going to try to kill a kraken?
I don't know. Yeah, do they slay an octopus? I mean, it would make sense, right?
It would.
I don't know when a knight would meet an octopus. Generally, the knights don't go, like, out onto the water.
Mike, it's role-playing.
Okay.
Okay, it's role-playing.
So you have some sort of, like a mariner knight of some yes. sort, right? That goes out there and battles the vicious kraken.
I don't mean to correct you, but it's either ice blue, boundless blue, or shadow blue are the official colors. I'm not sure which one you have on.
I don't know.
What did Salk say? Baby blue?
Baby blue.
Well, yeah, come
I'm going to need you to throw that one out.
Come
what
on,
do you think this
Salk?
Is? Ice, it's not, what do you say, ice blue,
ice
shadow blue,
blue? Boundless blue is the darker one, so that's either shadow or ice. I think that's ice.
I would say ice, don't you think?
Yeah.
Maybe it's shadow. I don't know.
I mean, ice would make sense with the sport.
That's North Carolina blue.
It's similar. Yeah, it's got some of that Tar Heel blue to it. Yeah,
honestly,
some of that.
Get baby blue. Spit it out your mouth.
Okay, I'll never say baby blue again.
Thank
hey,
you, Justin.
Brock, we're talking about beautiful cities, Seattle obviously being one of them. You travel as much as anybody I know. Most beautiful city, like underrated beautiful city in the United States.
Oh, my goodness gracious. That is tough. There's parts of the you know, everybody always talks about the Bay Area. I remember a couple years ago, one of my daughters had a basketball tournament, and I had never, like, driven east, right? Like, Walnut Creek, and then there were just,
awesome,
you know, oh my gosh. And then there were some, like, inlets and rivers and little places. It was incredible.
The Bay Area is pretty spectacular.
And even north, you get a little Hippieville, but, like, you go a little bit north into
Marin,
some of the, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody focuses like on San Francisco, but actually you can
go south. You ever go south? Go through
gorgeous.
Pacifica and then down to Half Moon Bay, like do
oh,
that.
Oh, Half Moon Bay. There you go.
San Francisco.
All right, dude, we got to go. We got to talk to Joan Buchigross.
Okay.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bucci. Yeah, say hello to
Bucci next. All right, thank you, Brock.
You
Brock
bet.
Heward with me every day at 7:45. If you miss it, you can hear it at 9:00. Coming up next, though, let's get right to Joan Buchigross. He's doing the play-by-play of the game tonight on ESPN. He's the host of The Point as well. And we'll talk some hockey next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.